first, for many people, finding a balance between parenting and working can be challenging in the best of times. And when the coronavirus pandemic arrived in the U.S., that combination became significantly more difficult for just about anyone as schools moved online and many jobs moved home as well. Fast forward to mid-July, and a lot of parents of school-aged kids are dealing with camps, summer school, and daycare, probably canceled, and even playdates or letting kids go to the park or pool, a thing of the past. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Does this describe what you've been going through the past few months? What's been the hardest to deal with? And have you found any approaches that have made it easier? What are your thoughts about sending kids back to school in the fall? What have you heard from your school district, if anything, and how will their plan match up with the demands of your job? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Deb Perlman created the Smitten Kitchen blog in 2006, and we've had her as a guest for Food Friday several times. Today, she's with us to talk about her recent piece for the New York Times titled, "In the COVID-19 Economy, You Can Have a Kid or a Job, You Can't Have Both." Deb, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, Deb, can you give us a sense of what your work-parenting balance was pre-COVID?
It was not balanced. I don't actually think balance is something that exists. It's like a mythical concept. But I would say that things were closer to in balance. My kids went to school. I have a kid who is going into kindergarten and one that's going into sixth grade. I worked from home all day, and my husband had a job in office. And when the kids needed to go someplace after school, we had a babysitter that came. And I guess, you know, it worked. It wasn't ideal. Childcare is expensive. It was a significant part of our earnings even before, but we managed to make do.
And then fast forward to when COVID hit, and you are in New York, so you were in a very hot spot and one of the earlier places I was dealing with this. What happened when the pandemic changed everything?
What happened was, you know, schools were canceled and, you know, everybody kind of understood that it needed to happen. My husband was working from home instead of an office. I was already working from home, except for I wasn't working from home. I was homeschooling my kids. So my husband, who has a real boss, I'm self-employed. I am my own boss. I don't mean to disparage myself, but my husband had a real boss. And so he didn't miss a phone call or meeting. I mean, you know how it is. You can't be offline at any point when your boss is looking for you. So I handled most of the things during the day, and then I would end up working until about like 2 a.m. trying to get done everything that I didn't get done. And it was very, very stressful. But, you know, I understand that relative to the struggles that other working families have had, this is truly nothing. But I can tell you that it was stressful for us. And the whole time I just kept thinking, like, how is this going to work? Why is nobody talking about how impossible this is? Like, the fact is that if you both have to be at your jobs, and again, I have some flexibility, so I just flexed my way out of a job, basically, during the day. But if you both have to work, or even if you're a single parent, you have to work, and your kids are supposed to be homeschooled, how? Which job are you not supposed to do? Like, how is this tenable? Well, maybe it's just a couple months. And then what happened was, at the end of the school year, we started getting, you know, the emails from the school, like, we're not really sure what we're doing this fall, but it looks like, you know, probably kids will be home 3 days and maybe they'll go to school 1 or 2 days a week. And I was like, oh my God, this is never going to end. I mean, it's not never, but of course it's, we were so surprised and disappointed to learn that 4 months later, there was really no real plan of how we were going to make this work. And I, that's where the op-ed came from, which was that, how are we supposed to do this? Are my kids supposed to skip kindergarten? Are they supposed to skip sixth grade, or are we supposed to skip paying rent this year?
Hmm. Well, and you say that many parents that you have talked to or seen posting in different social media communities, things like that, this is a very common concern, frustration, source of exhaustion. And yet you say that not a lot of people are giving voice to that. Why do you think that is?
You know, I have read articles about parents struggling in the, you know, during COVID and kids struggling. I read a lot, but a lot of it was painting it as an emotional concern. It was that parents were burnt out. Parents are fried. Parents are at their wit's end. And I was like, we're not burnt out. We're not fried. This isn't emotional. This is an economic policy that's crushing us. It is telling us that businesses can be open, but schools can't. We're the ones being ground up in the gears. I'm not going to have emotional problems if we can solve this economic one. So I feel like when we pass things off as an emotional concern, we use it as an excuse to ignore it. This is the effect. It's not the cause. And that was the perspective that I wasn't hearing, which is why I, as somebody who usually writes about like cake and banana bread and spaghetti and meatballs, was like, I need to say something. Why? I kept waiting for somebody else to write the article and nobody did. And so I guess I just stepped into it.
Well, and I think also something that you actually did in the first 5 minutes of our conversation and something that I have found myself doing as well is saying, I'm struggling with this. This is a problem. I can't do X anymore. And then immediately following it up with, but I know for so many people, it's so much worse. And I wonder if that's part of it too, is that there's a little bit of self-consciousness or even guilt or shame in saying like, I can't make this work, because we know there are people who are struggling even more.
Absolutely. I mean, I talked about this in the article. I'm like, we are privileged. We have a significant amount of privilege. We had two incomes. We were able to afford childcare. We had savings. When my kids needed markers and books and whatever for, you know, homeschooling, we just grabbed it. We didn't think, oh my God, where is this money going to come from? I have a flexible job. And so therefore, I say it's flexible, but you know, I might just miss my book deadlines. God, I hope my editors aren't listening. So flexible isn't, you know, I may not get fired tomorrow. I think it's important to be aware of how many things we might still have going for us despite this, like, you know, how many things, you know, if you are two working class parents or one working class parent, or you have a job that's considered you essential, as in you actually have to physically be there, you're in so much worse of a jam. But I do feel like a lot of parents weren't speaking up for a couple reasons. And the first is that you can't go on social media and complain that you're having a hard time at work doing it. It's going to basically announce to any boss in a capitalist society that somebody else could do your job better. Nobody can risk not having a job right now. Unemployment is at a catastrophic high. So you can't go online and say you're having a hard time. You also don't want to sound like you're really volunteering your kids to go back to school when we know it might not be safe. We don't actually know that sending kids back is safe. It's not looking good. Nobody wants to be the parent who volunteered their kids for the salt mine only to find out that it was actually unsafe and a very bad idea. And I also just think the third part is that if you're homeschooling all day and you're working, doing your job until 2 a.m, who's got energy left to write an op-ed? I mean, I would talk to my friends about this. I would talk to mom friends. We were all talking about it, but nobody has time to yell about it. So I don't know. I guess I did.
We're talking right now with Deb Pearlman. You can get back to that eventually. We're talking with Deb Pearlman right now. She created the Smitten Kitchen blog in 2006. And we are talking with her today about a recent opinion piece she wrote for the New York Times titled, In the COVID-19 Economy, You Can Have a Kid or a Job, You Can't Have Both. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. And Deb, you say in your article that when people do talk about it, the conversation often focuses on the wrong things, and that serves to deflect attention from what the real core issues are. And one of those is, you just kind of touched on, is whether schools are safe, teachers could get sick. It's almost pitting parents and teachers against each other when really they should be on the same team.
It is the last thing I want to do. I absolutely understand why teachers are saying, I can't even get enough paper towels for my classroom. We keep running out of chalk, and you're going to tell me that you can protect us against COVID? I totally understand. And in New York, I mean, again, you know, in New York especially, we have underfunded, overcrowded, understaffed public schools. They're not, you know, there are some wonderful schools, and it doesn't mean that they're not doing an amazing job with what they have, but these are not, this is not a place that can just pivot. We can't just magically invent 8 square feet per kid. They don't even have a budget for a lot of their school supplies, nonetheless, plexiglass dividers and PPEs. And there's a lot of logistical questions that aren't being answered. And I think the problem is that it's coming off as parents versus teachers. And I think that we should be moving our concerns further up the chain. Schools need money. They need funding, and they need the ability to think outside the box. This is not something that schools can do. state governments can. The federal government could open its wallet. There are creative solutions, but they're not going to come from your local school district, and it's unfair to expect them to.
Well, and one of the interesting aspects of that is just kind of asking that question assumes that teachers, that there's no overlap between the group of people who are teachers and the group of people who are parents. And there's a lot of overlap there. And so if you have teachers who are going back into what's potentially an unsafe environment, they also have to figure out what to do with their kids.
It's absolutely impossible. In fact, early on, one of the most heartbreaking things I was hearing from was actually one of my son's former teachers, and she was home with her two kids, and her husband had a job that he cannot miss a minute of. So she was supposed to be homeschooling her two kids while fully teaching a kindergarten class, not like kids that you can send off to do work on their own, fully teaching a kindergarten class remotely. And her story to me was so heartbreaking because, I mean, we talk about it being hard. It's impossible for a teacher with kids. And then I also heard from a lot of teachers who have elderly parents at home, or they have their own 7-year-old who's immunocompromised. They can't walk in, their trust in the schools to keep them safe is limited, and they're correct too. But I think the problem is that it's not us versus schools. It's, can we think more creatively about schools? Can the schools get the funding they may need to open? And if they can't, and I'm not just looking at schools to fix this, can we protect parents' jobs? Can workplace protections be put in? Can you have paid leave if you need to teach your kids all day? Can you not be professionally penalized if you can't make a meeting because is the official government policy that it's okay if my kid misses kindergarten in sixth grade as long as I can pay my rent on time? I mean, one of these things is going to have to give. And most people can't afford to live without money. Most people can't afford to live without a roof over their head or food on their plate.
We're talking right now with food blogger Deb Perlman about her recent piece for the New York Times titled, "In the COVID-19 Economy, You Can Have a Kid or a Job, You Can't Have Both." And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you trying to balance taking care of your children and working from home, or maybe having to go to work? What's been the hardest part? Do you feel like you're doing either one of those things very well? And what would you need to make this new way of life sustainable? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Deb Perlman, the food blogger behind the Smitten Kitchen website. While we usually talk with her about food, today she's with us to discuss her recent piece for the New York Times titled, "In the COVID-19 Economy, You Can Have a Kid or a Job, You Can't Have Both." And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you currently working from home while also taking care of children who might usually be in school, childcare, or at camp? Is it sustainable? If not, what would you need to make it work? And if it is working for you, what has made that possible? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Deb, one of the things that you point to that is not necessarily a helpful aspect of the discussion when it does happen about this crisis is that you should be enjoying the extra, quote unquote, quality time with your kids. How would you respond to that?
I am. It's got nothing to do with the economy, though. I love it. I love not having to miss these months with them. It's always a little struggle. But that does not mean that I should have my economic prospects removed or that I shouldn't work. I might enjoy having them doodle and seeing extra things that they're doing, but that's got nothing to do with it. I feel like what the person is arguing when they say that is they're arguing is, shouldn't you be home all the time? I feel like there is this low murmuring, barely low, below the surface, that actually moms shouldn't be working. And so when we, in the early months, saw a lot of these, you know, people making banana bread with their kids, which, of course, as a food blogger, I am all for, and the crafts and everything else, it seems like a return to classic values, blah, blah, blah. But it felt like it was just people were using it to validate this idea of, you know, of backwards progress.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Thomas in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, but what do you have to say?
So I was just going to share my story. All right. So I am an iron worker. So I build buildings, steel, you know, big steel buildings and all that. So we never stopped working. None of us. We're all working every day. And I got the virus, got sick. I was on my back for like a month and a week. And then went right back to work and then had to get back in shape, get my lungs back in shape and all that stuff. And at this point, everything's cool, you know. But, yeah, it took the main issue I had was it took the state so much time to back pay me for the unemployment. That's the only issue I had, you know.
And, Thomas, what's it going to be like if the kids don't go back to school in the fall or if they're only in school a few days a week and you need to go back to work? What would happen for you and your family then?
Oh, their mom does all that. I just pay the child support. I just send the check.
And is she working as well?
Yeah, she's doing some type of thing from home on a computer or something. I don't know what it is.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing that story, Thomas. And Deb, you know, it's every family situation is a little different, but a lot of the elements are the same of, you know, that balance of I need to pay the rent, I need to pay the bills, and my kids need to be taken care of. And then if you get sick, that's a whole other element.
It's terrifying. And I, since the article was published, I've gotten an avalanche of emails from parents, and I have called my inbox one of the most heartbreaking places on the internet because the stories that people are telling me about the struggles they've had since March are just devastating. And, you know, maybe each alone doesn't seem worth, like, you know, changing the course of everything that's happened, but these stories really add up, and you hear about people whose kids have really backslid with a lot, that not getting the services that they needed from school. And I've heard from many people who have been laid off, and, you know, they say it was a staff reduction, but it sure seemed to focus on the people who are having the hardest time juggling. And I've heard from people who say, I accepted a job and that I've been hoping to get for 10 years, and I'm going to have to, you know, not take this job in the end because I can't do it this fall if my kids aren't in school. And I've also heard from people who, you know, they sort of pause their careers thinking it might just be a couple months and they're never going to get back to work. And I think one of the saddest things, we know this disproportionately affects moms. And we also know, because studies after studies have shown, that people who leave the workforce have a really hard time getting back in. I mean, I want to make this clear that, like, I don't think it's on schools to open to, like, save parents' jobs. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, there's a larger conversation that has existed before COVID about why we need universal childcare. And, you know, if you want to look at the, you know, the short-term picture is I think that we need the kind of bailouts for working parents who are trying to school at home that we would have for airlines or banks. We have bailouts for other groups that need it. But in the longer term, you know, I think what this is really laying bare is the idea is that we just don't have good early childhood childcare in this country. We don't look at it as essential because we don't really love the idea of both parents working, and it's held us back. And it's really come to a head since March when any available system of childcare fell apart for basically everyone except for people who had such deep pockets that they could buy their way out of it somehow.
We're talking with Deb Pearlman right now about her recent article about trying to work and take care of your kids during the COVID-19 crisis. And Deb, you make a lot of pretty strong statements in your article, including this one. We are not burned out because life is hard this year. We are burned out because we are being rolled over by the wheels of an economy that has bafflingly declared working parents inessential. And, you know, it is very interesting because people who never would have been called essential workers before are now being called essential. What would it look like if all working parents were treated in that way right now?
I think we would have creative solutions. I think there would have been I think that we would have had to fund schools differently so they could make the changes that needed to be made because the kids would have to be educated. I think right now, if you have some sort of white-collar job or that's allowing you any kind of flexibility to work from home, it kind of looks like things are going okay. You know, we're not really sure if the kids are getting educated, but it seems like they might be. But that's it just seems like a really, it's a terrible way to talk about kids' education. Like, they might have sixth grade, they may not have it. Like, it's whatever, we'll find out. Like, that's how we treat, like, our next generation of Americans. It seems really upsetting. So I think that if we considered all parents' jobs essential, because if you have to do it and your kid also has to be schooled, it is essential. It's not as essential as going to work on a construction site or something like that, but it's the same thing where you're expected to do two things. I think we would be taking more seriously the school part, because right now I think it's the kids who are being really getting the worst end of this.
And Deb, briefly, as we start to wrap up, have there been any bright spots during all of this that have helped to keep you going?
Sorry,
Have there been any bright spots during all of this that have helped keep you going?
There have been many bright spots. I mean, I do enjoy seeing my kids more, although I think that they would be far happier if they were in school and fully thriving. I think it's a challenging time, and I think that if you can survive it, you feel very triumphant. But I also, I've been impressed, you know, by what people are able to pull off and what they're able to do with homeschooling. But I also think if nothing else comes out of this, and hopefully a lot more will, I think that we can all see the invaluable job the teachers are doing and that they should be paid better for what they do, because try to do it for even a week with a 4 or 5 year old. And no matter how smart you think you are, you realize that you're wildly under-equipped. And I'm hoping that we'll see a different kind of conversation around childcare after this, because it's always been a struggle. If you had two kids,
and we're going to have to leave it there, Deb. Sorry, we are out of time. Deb Perlman created the Smitten Kitchen blog. She recently wrote a piece for the New York Times titled "In the COVID-19 Economy, You Can Have a Kid or a Job. You Can't Have Both." I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Rob Ferret. Stay with us here on Central Time.